It's time to ask yourself what you believe.
Catapult the propaganda.
The truth is out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
From a craftsman-style bunker somewhere on the 39th parallel, it's PID Radio. Welcome, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. We are so glad everybody's here this weekend, and we're looking at a sunny day, but after days of rain,
yes,
we're lucky we're not paddling our way to this computer.
Nearly biblical proportions, almost 12 inches of rain in some parts of central and southern Indiana, and we're going to talk about the state of Indiana and as the feature topic of our program today. First of all, we need to remind people of something special coming up this coming week. We're going to be guests on the Future Quake show with Dr. Future on WENO Radio in Nashville, Tennessee.
We've Dr. Future and Tom Bionic.
Yes. It's the Future Quake Show, which airs at 4:30 p.m. Central Time on WENO AM in Nashville, Tennessee. And we'll put links to that in the show notes at PIDradio.com, as well as links to the recorded shows in case you missed the live broadcast. So, with that out of the way, let's get to our guest today, who's going to tell us a little bit about the state that we have returned home to. For you, Sharon, and for me, sort of my ancestral homeland. My ancestors got to Indiana around 1820, and there's something
strange.
Mine
didn't get here until the early 1950s.
Well, you're carpetbaggers then, you folks.
Yeah, we are.
But there's a gentleman who's noticed that there's something disturbing going on in the state of Indiana and has been trying to raise attention to it, call attention to it, and I think it's an important topic. Welcome, Stephen Michael Schroeder. Stephen, welcome to PID Radio.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Now, you've done some real interesting research into the influence of, would you say, the pagan gods into the state of Indiana?
Well, that's pretty much exactly it. It's odd how it all started because I graduated down here at Indian Creek in Trafalgar and went into the Air Force and became a security specialist and got out and went downtown and became a security specialist at Federal Protective Service security specialist at the federal courthouse and the federal office building, and worked there as a supervisor, and everything was going fine until I wrote a letter to the editor about the New World Order, because this was the time during Bush Sr. when he was saying the New World Order to the United Nations. And I did some research and found out about this New World Order was this United Nations peace plan that the haves surrender to the have-nots in exchange for peace. And I started doing research on Islam. And as I was doing all that, I came in conflict with my job because one of the letters got published in the Indianapolis Star. And so my boss, Frank Anderson, informed me that I couldn't write letters like that if I wanted to stay employed, which I thought was against my, you know, freedom of speech and freedom of press and, you know, being able to do what I can do as long as it doesn't affect my job performance. So anyhow, I went on to a radio show and was talking about this New World Order and how it's Islamic socialism, and got dismissed from my job at the federal building. And so while I was downtown trying to, you know, find further employment, I started stumbling into things. It started, you know, really waking me up to what was really going on down here. You know, you think you got freedom of speech until you say something. if you really say something, you'll find out.
It's like having insurance until you put in a claim.
Exactly, or a law unless you challenge it, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was really interesting. I lost my job at the federal government because of that, and then I was at the Capitol. And I noticed this monument, not only at the Washington, the statue of Washington in its full Masonic regalia, but there was a monument next to it that looked like the Ten Commandments, but being I'm a preacher's kid, I was pretty familiar with, you know, what the commandments were. And also, when I was wanting to, you know, I was studying archaeology in high school, I was wanting to be an archaeologist when I was a kid, had these, you know, grand visions of my career. And I noticed that there was a graven image on this tablet that was also on the altars in Carthage, in North Africa, where Bel worship was taking place. The same graven image of this breasted fertility sun goddess was inscribed on this Ten Commandments. Well, it's actually Nine Commandments because they didn't list the second commandment. The only commandment has a warning attached to it. For some reason, the state, you know, didn't think that was a worthy commandment.
The second commandment being?
Forbidding the graven images. The only commandment that has a warning attached to it.
Right.
For not to violate it.
Back up for just a second. Where did you see this?
This was at the state capitol, the Indiana State Capitol on Southwest Lawn.
Okay.
It was donated by the Fraternal Order of Eagles. It was a Masonic monument because it has a graven image of the Masonic God on it. But anyhow, the second commandment was removed, and what they did is they took the 10th commandment and said, thou shalt not covet, and they made two separate commandments out of it. So the 9th said, thou shalt not covet, and the 10th, thou shalt not covet. So it looked like there was 10 numbers there. But the second commandment, the most important commandment, the commandment, if you read Revelations, you find the adversary, the serpent, in the very end, the final temptation is, make an image, make an image. That's a violation of the second commandment. Okay,
right.
it just so happened the second commandment was removed, but the thing that really hit me was on the inscription, it said, I am the Lord thy God. Right above that inscription was this graven image of this pagan god known as Baal. And so I felt like I was in the Twilight Zone, and I looked, and it was dedicated back in 15, so it was almost 33 years at the time. And I was like, okay. And I mean, it really took me back, because here was a Ten Commandments monument that I'm sure stood there for, you know, like 3 decades. People walk by and think, oh, how nice that the state's promoting our religion, and not realizing they modified the text. And then they put a graven image on it. Okay, now that sounds like pagan to me. Okay, because pagans delight in desecration. And then there's a reason why they like to take the pure and add it with the profane. They like to combine them because not only does it desecrate, but it also produces a spell of strong delusion. But I'll get into that later. It's a warning flag that, okay, there's some deception going on here, because, you know, you talk about the end of times and a great deception that would pull even the elect possible. And here's a Ten Commandments monument that's not the Ten Commandments. It's desecrated, okay? So it takes you back. So at the time, I was like, okay, I got free time on my hands now. I'll go to the Indiana Civil Liberties Union, being they're always pushing to get, you know, Bibles out of school and, you know, like really enforcing laws against Christians only. I said, I'll fight fire with fire. I'll go to SLU and say, hey, they got a Ten Commandments monument on the state capitol down here.
Well, you think they would pick it up, because the ACLU was instrumental in getting the carved monument of the Ten Commandments removed from the Alabama state capitol.
Yeah, this was way before then. This was back in 1988, back before Roy Moore. Roy Moore was a distraction to get the controversy out of the state of Indiana, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But the whole thing was, this controversy was like the ACLU, when they finally challenged it with Obama, and they were saying that this is the bedrock foundation of their beliefs, this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But back when Michael Gradison was here in Indiana, back in the late 80s, when I challenged it, and Michael Gradison was there, I told them all about it, and I was telling them how it had been modified and had the graven image on it, and they said, we can't do anything about it. Okay, now that was another red flag, okay, because for the ACLU to say, we don't want anything to do with it, you know. And I was standing there in the office, and it was sort of like I was getting vibes like they knew about it, but they wasn't going to do anything about it, okay?
Huh.
So here's this controversy. You're going to try to convince the churches, okay, that the state is not promoting religion, but it's profaning religion, and it's too far-fetched for them to grasp. Or they're in their comfort zone and don't want to believe the reality that this is possible. And then, you know, I'm looking through the halls, I'm doing my little research into the detective work, because I think I found it something absolutely amazing, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I start going through this stuff. I go through the laws of Indiana and the constitutions and this, that, and the other, and I come across the Indiana official state poem. And I look down at the third sentence, it says, I must heed the native call, for a pagan voice within me seems to answer to it all.
A pagan voice within me seems to answer to it all.
Yeah, that is your official Indiana state poem. Okay, and I've gone through all the risk of challenging it, and you know it's a lost cause. They like that poem, and they're going to keep that poem. That just goes to show you exactly what they're about. These pagans went underground, and you know everybody thinks of pagans as Wiccan, this, that, and the other. They don't understand the bell worship that went underground is the pagan worship that's reemerged, and just like it's a revived Roman Empire. When you understand about Washington D.C. and how it's laid out and how it's connected to Indianapolis.
Oh, trust me, our listeners know. Our listeners are very aware of that.
Yeah, we've done at least one show on that with David Flynn that gets into that just a little bit. But, yeah, we need to do more on that. And that's why we're happy to have you on the show today, Stephen. So the ICLU wouldn't do anything about the Ten Commandments monument on the state capitol lawn. Where did it go from there? Was that it, or that in the state poem, or is there more to it than that?
Oh, there's tons more to it, and it's amazing just when you think you've got it all figured out. There's nothing else out there. You just get a wave of more information. It's unbelievable. anyhow, I did the right things. I contacted the senator. I contacted the Indianapolis Star, the Indianapolis News. I made phone calls. I made an issue about it to every legal agency there was that handled that kind of a case. And it's like, okay, as a taxpayer, I'm not going to pay when the state can desecrate and profane that which is sacred to me. You know, we talk about Christian persecution. And it's like, well, there's no persecution going on. But if you think about it, to have something that you love, something that you consider sacred, to be publicly displayed and desecrated and profaned, and then for them to expect you to pay taxes to do that with is too much expectations, in my opinion. And so I told them I had a demonstration out there. It was one of those times that I hear voices. Yeah. I was hearing about y'all. So it was one of those mornings where they go downtown and protest in front of the monument. So I get this sign talking about how it's the ninth commandment and it's been desecrated and profaned and removed and whatnot. And I'm standing in front of the tablets of the Ten Commandments. Well, at the time, Washington Street and the other street that goes down in front of it, there's no traffic there, you know. So I was basically protesting in front of nobody or nothing because it was just off to the side, you know, before they built the street and built a new addition onto the Capitol. Now it's real busy right through there. But at the time, they were doing construction. And so I was still demonstrating down there, and I was demonstrating, and I was like, well, this doesn't make any sense at all because there's nobody here. How am I getting my message out? And all of a sudden, these guys came out with these silver-tipped shovels and stuck them in the ground, stuck a podium up, and was putting all these chairs up, and come to find out it was Governor Biden was coming to give an overview speech. So here was an audience of 1,000 at least, you know, right across the street suddenly appear. So I knew that this was a confirmation when I was starting to doubt of what was going on. So I protested. I demonstrated. It was public knowledge. Nobody did anything. And I finally talked to the Capitol Police Chief, and I told him, I said, you got 3 months. You can either test it, put it in a museum, put it in your backyard, put it back at a lodge, do whatever you want to with it. But in 3 months, if it's not removed, I'm going to remove it myself. I'm going to use civil disobedience because that's my last resort. And they thought I was just talking, but that's not what happened. So at the time it expired, and it was one of those things where in the process was hitting it with, you know, like chills going out the eye and spreading it on that message from Daniel talking about the judgment of this kingdom. And, you know, they're spreading it off, and we knocked it down before, and they popped it back up, you know, and this time they put cameras all around it. So then I went to the building manager and told him about how much money it was wasting on setting up all the security, trying to prevent something that couldn't be prevented because this isn't your normal, typical story. When you do something like this, you know the history of the Ten Commandments. They talk about wanting to display the Ten Commandments. They knew nothing about the Ten Commandments because if they knew anything about the commandments, they know about the consistent history of the Ten Commandments. Mm-hmm. That you don't take it and you display it next to pagan gods. That's what the Philistines did wrong when they captured the Ark of the Covenant. They set it up next to Dagon. Then they found Dagon on his face, and they propped it back up just like they did at the monument at State Capitol. Next time they found the monument, it was on its face, but it was broken into pieces, and that's what happened down at the monument. You do not combine the sacred word of God with the living images of your government.
So what happened then? I mean, did you get into any trouble for this, or were you connected to any of this?
No.
What happened?
I did this in broad daylight. It was one of those times. It was another Sunday morning where it was like about 8 o'clock in the morning or something like that. It was daylight, and they knock it over. So I just went up there and pushed it, knocked it over, and then went fishing. Just be safe. But 6 months went by, and they didn't do anything, even though they had the cameras set up. I knew the cameras were set up, and it didn't cross daylight, so there would be no – because I looked at it like this, okay? The only way this message is going to get out is if it comes to, you know, public court papers.
Right.
You know, court documents. I was willing, you know, I'd already lost my house, so it wasn't that big of a sacrifice, you know. And I found a cause that I felt like I could really stand for because I felt it inside that this was a cause to stand for, you know. So I was willing to do that. And I knew, I figured it would come and arrest me because I had sent articles to the Minneapolis Star because they were saying how, you know, every time it was vandalized, they call it Indiana's longest running mystery because they had no idea who was behind it. They were trying to portray it as somebody was against government promoting religion. So this was the time when they was getting Goldsmith involved downtown as far as finding a way around constitutional law to fund money to religious organizations because that was Bush's big faith-based initiatives thing, and Goldsmith was the one who was supposed to mastermind it here in Indiana. So they was trying to keep controversy down about that whole thing and try to make this whole thing look like it worked out real good so they could advance it on to where we're at the place today where you got the faith-based initiatives, where I'm sure a lot of 90% of the Christians think that's a good thing to be on, you know, Washington's welfare.
Sure.
Because now they're going to start preaching what Washington wants to preach, and they will not speak the word of God without being, you know, chastised like McCain's doing, you know, Parsley and Hagee.
Amen.
You know,
amen to that, brother.
Well, you can't speak the truth. You can't preach the gospel. You can't say Islam is an antichrist religion you know, even though the foundation of our faith is John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, mm-hmm. that whosoever shall believe in him shall have eternal life. The Quran's foundation is in the Quran's 1988 verse. They say, it is a monstrous thing to say that God begat his Son. It is a capital crime in Islamic law to say that you believe in the Son of God. So right now, I'm not worried about Islam putting a fatwa on me. According to their Islamic law, I'm already a dead man walking because I do believe in the Son of God. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So I'm not worried about that. It's just right now we're in a situation to where everybody's talking about change and they don't see what's coming down the pike. They're not putting the pieces of the puzzle together. And the only reason I'm trying to reveal what's going on as far as Washington and its foundation and its pagan beliefs and its trappings with bell worship is because we are in a situation now that we are ready to do battle. Whether people believe it or not, or whether they like to believe it or not, we are ready to do battle, and we will not be able to win this battle unless we prepare the church and we clean house and we get these things that caused all these problems in the past behind us, because he can only help us if we help him help us.
And our number one weapon, of course, is hitting our knees, which a lot of people are praying within the Christian church. But as you say, 90% of them believe that getting that government welfare check through the faith-based initiative movement or by taking the 501c3 tax exemption is a good thing. So now, Stephen, you say that 6 months went by before anything happened. How did it finally come to the attention, or rather, how did the authorities finally acknowledge your involvement in this, in the smashing of the Ten Commandment monument?
Because I wasn't going away. I wanted this to become, you know, a story to where the public would know what the state has actually done to expose them, and they wasn't willing to exchange that. It was 6 months, and you know, for the Indianapolis Star, I was writing letters nonstop to the Indianapolis Star. That was the only outlet I had, so they knew exactly what was going on, you know. But I found out that some of the statuary, like their Pan statue, their goat god statue downtown right across the street from them, is donated by the Indianapolis Star. So you only have one major newspaper, which is really convenient for a state like this. It's doing what it's doing, you know, so there's no other way to get them out. So I finally submitted a full-length page, you know, letter to the Jewish Post and Opinion, which is in Indianapolis, but, you know, the small paper, but it was basically saying, check this out. You know, the state knows that it broke the law. This is what they're doing to your Ten Commandments. I figured if Christians didn't care about the Ten Commandments, maybe the Jewish congregation would care about the Ten Commandments a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. So good point.
Pardon me?
Oh, good point. Go ahead.
Yeah, so that was logical. So, you know, I wrote a letter stating, you know, this is what they did, and this is what I did, but yet they do nothing. I pretty much threw the gauntlet down and said, you know, they're the ones who broke the law, and me walking around free, that's evidence of it. Well, the next day when I was at work, you know, I had a call to come to the office, and there was two state police there. And so they arrested me, you know, like 6 months after they already had the footage of what went down. So it was one of those things where they forced their hand. So I got my day in court, you know. So I'm figuring, well, this will be a good thing. But Judge Richard Slee, the prosecutor, the public defender that gave me, the jury foreman, all of them were Roman Catholics. And this is after they already brought in the jury for me to select, you know, like three people that I could dismiss. And so I identified three Masons that was in the jury and dismissed them. But still, that was the setup of the courtroom. And here I am just trying to say, you know, look, I'm a Protestant, and I'm kind of offended, you know, that you would put up a monument and you would change it to give accommodations to the Catholic version, because I guess that's the Roman Catholic version. They also do not include the same commandment. Which, you know, kind of confirmed my case. It was, you know, illegal because it assumed preference to Catholics over Protestants. And we want to start something in Northern Ireland over here by the state giving preference to one or the other. You know? So that kind of confirmed my case. But when you're thinking that, you know, the judge is Roman Catholic, my public defender is Roman Catholic, and the prosecutor and the jury foreman, it was kind of hard for me to, you know, say that, you know, why I'm offended and had to kind of, you know, it wasn't a jury of my peers. It wasn't even a courtroom of my peers. They had it set up to where, you know, I'm going to do jail time, and that's what I did. So I did my jail time, and while I was in there, I was working in the kitchen, and they was impressed with my work. So the kitchen manager asked if I wanted to be employed when I got out. So when I got out, I started working in the jail kitchen as a food production supervisor. And I did that for like 3 years, and then they had a new, I guess, whoever controls the jail, came down and talked to the food manager and said, do you know anything about him as far as what he's about? And this is what she relayed to me after he had left. But he said I could no longer work there, okay, in the building, you know, because of my past. And I'm like, well, dude, this is a jail kitchen. These guys have come in here. It's got a lot worse than, you know, grotesque and state desecration of the Ten Commandments, you know. And, you know, as far as the food, when I worked at the Federal Building for 7 years, and they had nothing but good things in my file. You know, never wrong, got promoted and all that, you know. So it just goes to show you the retaliation. They just trying to blackball me, you know, making you lose your job is not bad enough, but if you keep on pushing, then they're going to try to take, you know, any chance of any kind of employment from you.
Huh.
You know, but they have ways of pushing buttons. It's like my kids went to IPS, and my daughter come home, and she's a straight-A student, and she came home, and she has this paperwork. You know, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, you gotta be kidding. She's learning verses out of the Quran. Okay. I'm like, what is this? And she goes, Islamic studies. And I'm like, Islamic studies? And it, you know, I went through the whole book, and I've got documents on this, went through the whole book, finding, you know, the differences between, you know, like, the chapters of Islam and the chapters of Christianity, and how everything was referred to in Christianity as past tense. In Islam was referred to as present tense. And, you know, the Quran was the word of God, but the Bible was ancient writing. And I had this whole list compiled showing that these school books that are supposedly, you know, teaching kids, you know, equally about all these religions, they're indoctrinating the school kids with Islam. So, I went to address the school board, and my son's principal was sitting behind me, you know, making noises and whatnot. And the next day, he doesn't come home from school. He doesn't get off the bus, and he's never spent a day away from the house in his life. You know, so then my wife calls me at work and says, you know, Justin didn't get off the bus, you know. I don't know where he's at. So I go down to school and find out, you know, the principal thought it was a good idea to put him under child protective custody. You know,
what?
No, this is real. And
child protective custody? For what reason?
They call it Chipson. Okay, they chips. TH, or something like that. And so, you know, you can understand being upset because this was after the jail time and everything else. I was trying to do things the lawful way, the rightful way, you know, address the whole school board down on Walnut Street of exactly what's going down. And this is the retaliation I get, that they can take your kid away from you and you have no recourse. And this is on a Friday. And my kid is kind of like, you know, he'd never been away from the house, let alone being a shelter for inner city troubled youth, you know. And I couldn't see him, and I called and tried to have my parents come see him or any kind of communication. There would be none. Okay, so that night, my wife cried all night, okay? It was one of the worst. I can't even recall it without getting upset. It was one of the worst nights I've ever had, okay? And just that this city's remaining shows that I'm pretty merciful, because that was wrong. That crossed the line in my book. But at any rate, we didn't get him until, like, Monday. So they had him over the weekend. And they said somebody made a mistake, somebody overreacted, as if that would quiet me down. And I tell you what, it changed my wife's, as far as support.
How old was your son at that time?
I believe he was like 9.
Oh.
And yeah, it was one of the harder things of my time. And it was like, okay, this is truly war. And I know what my weapon is. I'm not violence. I'm not into any of that. It's just I know the word, and I know how the word can topple people from high places. And it's just a matter of having the boldness to say it. But that one hurt the most. But I'm saying in Indiana, there's retaliation going on, and this has been going on for a long, long time here. So anyhow, if you want to get back to the Ten Commandments, okay, the Ten Commandments, they was destroyed. They was removed. 6 months later, they came. They arrested me. And then I got out, and then there was a lot of this controversy. Roy Moore came to the Indiana State Fairgrounds to have a Ten Commandments rally. And he had all these people from all these local churches. He had a cult, you know, pastor there or whatnot. A lot of the, every news channel was there. It was a big time thing for the Ten Commandments rally at the State Fairgrounds. And Roy Moore was coming there. And he was saying that they had got permission to replace the monument at the Indiana State Capitol, and all they needed to do was collect money for this monument. But the foundation was still there. All they had to do was collect money for this new monument. And I knew that nobody downtown would be silly enough to give this man permission, because it was still, you know, the ICLU was happy because it was gone and they didn't have to challenge it. You know, and the state was still, well, we can't have this one person tell them, the state what to do and, you know, getting away with it. Even though I did my time, they was wanting it back up because they didn't want me to have the last word of thanks. So they had this big rally of little boys up there telling everybody, yeah, all we got to do is just collect the money for it and make this monument, and the state's going to let us put it back there. I knew that was wrong. So I called these, you know, like GSA and the building manager up there at the state capitol. I'm like, who's giving Roy Moore permission to replace the monument? Nobody. you know, after transfer call, nobody gave permission, and I knew that. And so what it did, he's passing around, you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken buckets, you know, for people to throw money into, and he fills his buckets up with it, and he takes off. And I'm like, you know, that's interstate fraud, because number one, he's telling people he got permission to do something. All he needs is to pay for a monument, and he's collecting money from all these people, and then he's taking it down to Alabama and having them pay to put in Roy's Rock so he can make a big chance down there in Alabama, to where the whole nation's thinking this controversy is about, you know, government promoting religion, when the whole controversy started with government profaning religion. That's a whole Roy Moore story in a nutshell. You know, he brought his monument here one time, you know, like a sideshow freak, you know, trying to make money off it. And on the back of it, you know, it's like nature's God, you know, this monument, Ten Commandments, you got on the front of it, to the God of nature. And on the back of it, it's got a copyright. He's got a copyright with his name on it.
Wait a minute, this is Roy Moore's version of the Ten Commandments?
Yeah, the one he's got on the semi that he drives around every place, and he brought it here to Indiana.
How can you copyright the Ten Commandments?
Then that's what I asked him. And then I had one of his people who was, you know, like up there helping people up there, and, you know, he comes up to me, you know, trying to intimidate me and start cussing at me and telling me I better not lay a blankety hand on that, you know, there's going to be some problems. You know, like he's going to intimidate me. He obviously had no idea who I was, you know, or maybe he did. But there was, you know, whispers in the crowd that we was there, and they knew that, you know, I'm going to be the one to stand up and say, hey, guess where this rock came from? Guess where Roy's rock came from? He collected it from money fraudulently from Indiana. You know, now here's a judge who's already in contempt of his own court, but this is interstate fraud. You know, so I'm calling up the FBI saying, hey, I got a federal judge here involved with interstate fraud. Well, how much money did he get? I don't know. I told him the story. Well, if it's not a certain amount of money, okay, blah, blah, blah. You know, then that's exactly where we're at down here. You know, and here's a story going around. Just, oh, Roy Moore, he's a folk hero. Why? Because he violated the law? Oh, but let me use civil disobedience on a just cause, and they want to hang me. You know, and that's the difference between the truth and the lie. You know, if you tell somebody a lie, they believe it. You tell them the truth, and they ain't going to accept it. You know, everything's upside down and topsy-turvy right now down here. It's no wonder everybody's getting confused, and they have no idea which way they're heading. You know? So in the meantime, Governor O'Bannon steps up, and he's going to, you know, instead of pursuing, you know, Roy Moore, he's going to pass a law, the first law in American history, to allow, you know, Ten Commandment displays at the state capitol. And they lobbied, and they tried for about 10 years, you know, the whole lobbying process at the time the other one went down, to get this one replaced. Well, I go back to the Civil Liberties Union. I'm like, look it, you know, we're not going to go through all this again. You know, you missed your chance the first time. And, you know, the state was bragging about how nobody's going to topple this one because it's like 6 tons and it's like the size of a truck and this, that, and the other. You know, and it was like Roy Moore's version, because this was the Indiana Civil Liberties idea on how to get away with displaying the Ten Commandments for sale. I'm sure about anyhow. He said if they had a Ten Commandments display, it would be allowed on state property as long as they included the writings of other great men like Washington. So you have all these other laws of men, you know, combined with God's law, as if God's law is equal to the writings of men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys ain't dumb how they play their game, because, you know, they have assistants on the other side just like we have assistants on the other side. And we can't underestimate their levels of wickedness when you think about it, you know. So he tried to put it up there, and, you know, and he knew what the whole situation was, and the state spent a lot more money and going to third court, that and the other, and they lost. You know, bottom line, they lost. They went to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. They tried it 2 times up there. They lost. And, you know, state had all their lawyers and attorneys and this and that, and they lost. They went to the Supreme Court, and the interesting thing about the Supreme Court is they ruled that some could stay and some had to be removed. Anyone that, you know, the ones that was originally there in, like, 1958 when they started putting these throughout all the states, you know, if it was to promote the Ten Commandments movie, even though it was 2 years after the Ten Commandments movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they said that those could remain because those are the ones that are desecrated or modified. You know, the ones with the graven images or the text is modified. So the Supreme Court said those could remain, but the new ones that, you know, all these representatives are trying to get, you know, that's most the Protestant version, because the states wanted to put the Protestant version the next time, even though it was, you know, polluted with the writings of, you know, some of these Unitarian forefathers were whatnot on the sides of it, you know. But that's the Supreme Court basically said the Catholic versions that are profane get to remain, but the new modified Protestant versions can't be put up. So it was like a split decision, which wasn't even a decision, you know. And you still have today people on TV talking about, you know, how we got to get involved in politics. And, you know, the way I read it, it says be separate, come out of her. We're not going to change the beast. We're not going to change the nature of the beast. No more going to change the spots on a leopard. You know, we're being instructed to be separate from it. And we should have learned the lesson when with Bush coming in there, talking about how he's a evangelical and this, that, and the other. And he's a president who was historically known now as establishing the first terrorist duly elected state in the Middle East. Okay, and that's just one of the many, many things that's gone wrong here. Okay, you got pastors who's endorsing, you know, like Giuliani one day, and then when he's not going to make it, all of a sudden he's going to jump over on McCain's side. McCain's like, you can't preach the gospel and support me, you know, and so Haiti, you know, rejects his, you know, endorsement. God doesn't change his mind on things like this. It's making a mockery of the church. You know, and pastors today, everybody's afraid to speak out against Islam, even though, you know, Islamic law says that we should be executed, it should be capital crime and be executed because of our simple belief in the only begotten Son of God. Yeah, we're supposed to be, you know, like tolerant and next to him, and better yet, you know, fund him a lot of money. Okay, this whole thing about Reverend Wright, you know, and Farrakhan and his father Flager. Okay, here's one thing that if you watch the news right now, this is interesting. This is one thing nobody's talking about. You know, you'll have Obama being questioned. Do you accept the support from Farrakhan? That's the question. No, here's what the question is. How much support did Farrakhan accept from Obama? Okay, because he's got Father Flager. Well, he got like over $200,000. Okay, now how much did Reverend Wright get in 20 years? Mm-hmm. How much did the Nation of Islam get? Okay, this is money, tax dollars, being funneled to these people so they can go out and do social services for the poor in their community while at the same time blasting the government who gave them the money in the first place. Okay, that's how Hamas got elected in the Middle East. And that's how you're having this problem here in America, because we're surrendering, you know, land or wealth in exchange for peace as if extortion is a viable peace plan, you know? So we're getting all this money to give it to, you know, all these radical extremists who say they do good deeds, and they take their money and they go out and they help people, and it's just like Hamas. Why did Hamas get elected? Because it was being funded by a bunch of rich Arabs, Islamic extremists to be exact. Who knew that they would take this money and they would go out to the poor and they would clothe them, they would feed them, they would fix their houses, they would do things for them to where these people didn't care if Hamas went out and started killing people or taking their heads or blowing up the innocent people. They don't care about that. They love Hamas because that's where their good comes from. And that's just like everybody else who gets good from their father. They don't care about anything else except where the good comes from. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the faith-based initiative, the Christians are like, yeah, we're for that. How sad is that? Okay, and then you got all this money in the tunnel to Islamic extremists who hate Christians, who want this land to put up their mosque and run us off. And like, you know, the Nation of Israel, I'm talking about, you know, this is Armageddon. Oh, there won't be any churches remaining. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely know what you're saying. Well, Derek, let's stop for a minute. I want to get back is the Ten Commandments statue there now?
No. They lost in court, so it's not there. So they let the grass grow up and pretty much are licking their wounds on it.
Okay, there's nothing there now. Now, I have lived in Indianapolis a number of years, many, many years ago, and I know that there are lots of places in Indianapolis where you find pagan statues. Is there a reason why Indianapolis has that many?
Well, if you find that the majority of the pagan statues, if you start, there's five blocks, I call them five blocks of Babylon, and what it is the Indiana War Memorial. And it's five blocks. And in those five blocks, if you start at the very north, you know, on the other side of the federal courthouse, you'll come to it's called University Park. And they just happen to have on a pedestal the universal symbol of paganism, which is Pan, the goat god. And on the other side of the fountain, you'll see an Asherah. And I've got this all on my YouTube videos. If you want to go through and look at the YouTube videos, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. An Asherah is what the Canaanites used to use as the consort of Baal. They'd take a tree and they'd lop its arms off and carve breath into it, and it'd be a tree goddess. And that goes along with the Egyptian tree goddess. So across from Pan, you have this tree goddess, you know, this tree with its breath, its arms, and whatnot. And in the center of it, at the fountain, at the top of it, you'll see there's this young lady with her breath exposed, and she has horns, and that's the daughter of Pan. So you got Christians who have the only begotten Son of God. Well, what better does the Christians for the pagans to say they have a daughter of the devil? I'm high on a pedestal where there's no way you could display, you know, a cross or a crucifix at. But yet the pagans can get away with it because it's art.
Now, this is all land that's owned by the state.
I don't know whether it's state or whether it's federal, okay, because, see, the Indianapolis is significant because when Washington was laid out, And if you understand where the White House is and the Capitol and the obelisk, when you understand how that's laid out in the trinity of Osiris and Isis and, mm-hmm. And it's the Egyptian trinity, mm-hmm. you know, the intersection of. Anyhow, that national road runs from Washington, runs into Indianapolis. So what the federal government did, they gave this Indiana, the state of Indiana, it's called the donation from the corporation. And it was a 2 by 2 mile square, and that was where they were supposed to have their capital. It was the 2 miles by 2 miles, and that is the place where they put the downtown, the monument downtown. And then 5 blocks north of that, northeast of this monument circle, is the 5 blocks of Babylon, which was donated, I guess, to commemorate the war dead. But if you go right across the street from this University Park is this the Vietnam War Memorial, and you'll find it is a temple to the war goddess Ishtar. If you go up into the upper room in the shrine room, above the altar, you'll see this huge flag, and we can get into the flag, but that takes some time. Above it is the eight-pointed Star of Destiny. And in the earlier brochures, before I pointed out to them the connection between the Star of Destiny, the Tablets of Destiny, and Ishtar being the keeper of the Tablets of Destiny, and her image, or her great image, is the eight-pointed star, and to have an eight-pointed star above the flag, above the altar, in a shrine room, and calling it the Star of Destiny, which was the Babylonians called Ishtar, is saying that this is a temple to your goddess Ishtar, the Babylonian war goddess, because, well, that's how they, since ancient times, believe they won wars, was because they would promise to build the goddess, the war goddess, a temple if they got victory. You know? So anyhow, if you understand, they also got the display of the Ten Commandments inside that shrine room next to the war goddess's big face, okay? Not to mention all the other pagan things. Well, then right across the street from the Indiana War Memorial is called the Federal Obelisk, okay? And it's a huge black granite obelisk. And obelisk is the Egyptian graven image of the erect phallic of the god of earth. Mm-hmm. Okay. So not only do they have this here, but on the two faces of this, they have these big bronze plaques, and they're about 7 foot tall by about 4 foot wide. And one of them is the cross, and the other one is the Ten Commandments. So they've got these two big bronze plaques displayed on an obelisk. So what they've done is they've taken the most heinous, the abomination of desolation, the obelisk, and put the Ten Commandments and the cross displayed on the obelisk. Okay, and now if that's not bad enough, if you look at the cross, well, if you look at the commandments, you'll see his hand is hiding the second and the Tenth Commandment, just like the commandments they messed up with the states, which is coincidental enough. But if you look at the cross on the other side, on the cross you'll see images of a being, but it's not a Jewish carpenter. It is the snake goddess. It is the consort of Baal. So they've got the cross displayed, sandwiched between Ashtaroth and Baal. Okay, now, as pagans delight in desecration, not only because it profanes and pollutes, you know, and weakens the pure, but it produces a spell of strong delusion that people can walk by a monument for 33 years and not see the lie. You know, it's just like those cross and commandments. They spread sin and didn't even realize that on this cross is images of Ashtaroth, the snake goddess. Now, what is her image, you know, standing with the arms up holding snakes, what does her image on the cross have to do with Christianity? You know? And if people upset over, you know, a crucifix in a glass of urine or some elephant dung thrown on a painting of Mary, why don't they get upset that the cross and the Ten Commandments is displayed on the obelisk? Or that they would desecrate the Ten Commandments with a graven image of a very, very heinous fertility goddess. Okay? So that's where we are in Indiana. Okay? And there's a lot of significance why Indiana is important when you understand that what they did with this 2x2 square. This 2x2 square, and I've got this information on YouTube on like the classroom videos, trying to explain it the best I can, where 2x2 squares. And what they did was use said geometry, and they designed a 1 mile square out of the center of it. Okay? Mm-hmm. And basically, the foundation of Indianapolis is nothing more than a tablet of destiny. This was an astrological horoscope chart that was used back in the days. It's got 13 houses on it. And they would use this. This is how the Babylonians were so precise in predicting things or knowing things were going to happen, including the three guy that foretold the birth of Christ. This is how they did it with this tablet of destiny. Okay, others call it the philosopher's stone. It actually works. In fact, I tell everybody not to try to get involved with it because, you know, just as I know the good is real, the evil is real. And you don't tamper with things unless, you know, you want a mission and you know what you're doing. Other than that, you're going to get in some trouble. Anyhow, these tablets of destiny or whatnot, that was the foundation of Indiana. And the center square is a 1 mile square. And what they did was they laid that out into a 5x5 square. If you know anything about the tables of the planets or the talismans, And if you go back to the original of the second commandment about making a graven image, it actually forbids making a talisman, which is a graven image. And these talismans, these graven images are actually these magical stones that they use to conjure up forces to assist them in what it was they were trying to obtain. And that's one of the big reasons why he forbid it. We had a warning attached to it because, and that's why the common people were, you know, these witch hunts and persecuting people, because the common people were finding out about this and learning that if you do this, you know, this 6x6 square on gold, or you do this 5x5 on iron, or this certain thing on certain metal, certain times of days, using certain tones and certain colors, that things would happen. And, you know, the government at the time was the ones who was wanting to keep track of all this stuff. There's like Reagan and everybody, you know, consulted astrologists. They don't want the commoner to have the same information because then they wouldn't have an edge. And that's the same reason why these secret societies are only effective unless their secrets are revealed to the uninitiated. Because then it's like game over, because what's separating it, you know?
The secret knowledge, yeah. Hey, yeah, when was that 2-mile by 2-mile square donated from the federal government to the state?
Oh, man, I'm not... I had this thing like when I was in school. If they said there's going to be a surprise quiz, my mind would go blank.
Was it back in the early days of the state, 1820s, or was it more recently?
No. It was way before that. It was at the foundation of the state, before the state became a nation. I mean, you know, they're talking about this war memorial, this monument circle, being something that they, you know, designed for the Civil War vets. When they had this design and this engineering and this understanding of what this, you know, door was all about way before any war. So, you know, it's like when Washington came out and they donated this, and they was telling everybody they had to move off, and this would be for long, long after they left. You know, they knew what was going there. You have to have Washington and Indiana, because it's like they believe in this apotheosis. It's like the Romans believed in the apotheosis, and the Egyptians believed in the apotheosis. And even the mural downtown in the House Chambers at the state capitol, they got this big depiction of the temple goddess and the tree of life and the doorway and how it all works. And that painting is called the Apotheosis of Indiana. Mm-hmm. Now, if you look up the statement of what apotheosis is, it's the making of something into a god or a deity.
Right.
So here you have this mural in the House of Representatives, which is our lawmakers' chambers, you know, saying that they can't say the name of Christ in the chambers. You have a mural that's talking about the making of the state of Indiana into a goddess, you know, and for just cause. It's like the Bell Astroth worship. You have Bell and his consort. Washington is the male. Indiana is the goddess. And it's that whole sexual religion where he rises in the east and he sets in the west, and that downtown monument circle was built for the sole purpose of the doorway of them going into the underworld and traveling 12 hours to be resurrected again at the Capitol.
We have said it so many times on our show that the state of Indiana is nothing more than in Diana.
Yeah, in Diana Canal. And if you understand about Diana and the huntress and the goddess and the state of Indiana being made into this goddess, it's the concert of Bell. It is the Bell Ashford. It's the fertility cult. It's like the you know, your national monument is a phallic symbol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, you worry about what kind of words are said on any river. I mean, that's the deception it's talked about. You know, you're worried about the little things. Well, they do matter. But if you look at the big picture, you understand, okay, there's a bigger problem that we're not facing here. And the whole thing is to try to get the church to understand that it's so late in the ballgame now that, you know, if they don't get it by this time, you know, they don't have to worry about saying, well, we shouldn't get involved in politics because we feel compelled that it is our job and our duty to get involved in politics. Well, hopefully this is taken care of for you because they've all been rejected. Anybody that preaches the word and says, you know, this is the whore and this is the beast, you know, and this is Antichrist because they're Antichrist. And their words came, you know, 667 years after Christ saying, you know, he's a liar. So, you know, according to my book, I was pre-warned. Somebody's going to come up and say, your Christ is a liar. Don't assist them in any way. You know, our government is bending our arm, trying to force us to assist them. Well, we're some kind of racist if we're not with them. It's like, well, wait a minute. You know, these people are wanting to kill us. They're hostile. Okay, my religion is an offense to them. And yet I'm supposed to assist them and possibly even vote for them or pay them taxes so they can go out and help their needy at the same time wanting to eliminate my race and religion? You know, there's some crazy things that need to be addressed here. And you get to the point now where nobody can even ask questions, you know, being racist. I'm not racist. I think it's ignorant to hold anybody for a cause because they can't help the way they're born. But religion is a choice. Religion is a faith or a belief, just like one kind of egg or another. That's a choice. That's a selection. So therefore, you know, that is your choice. And if I hold that against you because that's your choice, well, choices have consequences. But to hold it against somebody because of what, you know, how they was born, what sex they was born, what color they was born, that's ignorant. and has nothing to do with it. But they like to make it to where you can't say, you can't speak the word of God unless, you know, you got a king out there saying it's ridiculous and it's preposterous of things that are being said. This is the word of God, so you got to be careful what you're saying. You know, actually examine what's being said here. If you got a Protestant saying Islam is Antichrist, and you got, you know, Islam saying, if they say they believe in the only begotten Son of God, execute them. Well, you know, what do you mean to do? The least you expect on me is not want to try to assist. You know, and that's why the Bible's final instructions are so clear. Be separate, come out, you know, obey him, and he will become your God. He's the one who's supposed to fight our battles, but we'll never be able to have our battles fought if we're constantly offending him where he has to turn his back on us.
Well, we need to open our eyes, and we need to see what's around us, and it's definitely, you know what, Stephen, we are living in the world. No matter what we do, we see that the world does not love Lord God Jehovah. And as Christians who follow Jesus Christ, who recognize that he died on Calvary for us, and because we accept that, we become his children, and we get to co-reign with him, which I think is the coolest thing ever, doesn't mean that we can't, that we're no longer, that we don't have to see what's around us, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I want to back up for a minute, though. You were talking about the 2x2 mile square area of Indianapolis that was given long ago by, you said, by Washington. Now, when you say that, are you talking about the founders of the
No, this is a group of people called the Corporation of Indiana.
Okay.
It was like land speculators, wealthy people. You know, it's like most of the people. If you ask them what the Revolutionary War was about, it'd be it's about taxes. No, mm-hmm. It's the whole thing. The whole thing was about the Royal Proclamation. You know, 1760, Royal Proclamation was that these land speculators couldn't trespass over the mountains into Indian territory to speculate on the land because of the problems it was causing. And Washington and Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin and all those guys you hear about and learn about in school were land speculators, and they owned land companies.
Oh,
and, the Declaration of Independence originally read, the pursuit of land, not the pursuit of happiness. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of land. And some thought that was too obvious, and the commoner went and joined the cause of these wealthy elitists, you know, by rebelling against it. And you think about the genocide and everything that it caused. Washington's first mission was, he was a British officer, and there was other British officers. Crawford was one of them. And he wrote a letter to Crawford saying, you know, with this royal decree from the king saying there's no trespassing, that if you go in there and act like you're hunting and you find me some land, I'll secure it for you because I got connections, we'll survey it, and we'll split it. So basically the first thing that Washington did was conspire to break a federal law. And in the process, Crawford got killed. And so Washington had blood on his hands because he had somebody else do his dirty work. And that was the first thing he did. And so what other choice did he have? He was going to be executed for treason, for a federal crime, just like anybody else would today. So there was no other choice but to revolt. And that's where France came in and the French Freemasons came in. And it was all about obtaining this land, and it was all about land grabbing. And that's what the land speculation was all about. And that's why they had to commit genocide on the Indians. And that's why Harrison, when he came to Prophetstown up here in Indiana, and he was telling them about, we need to secure this land to establish the throne of the true religion. And he wasn't talking about Christianity. He was talking about star worship, and that's what these guys are all about. You look at the foundation, how they build their houses. It's the revived Roman Empire, and it's all about star worship. It's Babylon, it's Egypt, it's Rome. That's all star worship.
Do you know the names of the men who were part of the Indiana Corporation? Is that what you called it? Or the Company of Indiana?
It was the Corporation of Indiana. You know, trying to find any kind of information on it, it was like almost impossible. It was like trying to find the original maps of downtown. Good luck. I'd like anybody who's got real good skills, detective skills, to try to find some of this information that's already been found in any of the access out there, okay, because you just can't find it.
I've got a friend who's an amazing researcher, so I'll see if she can get on it. How did you find out about the Corporation of Indiana in the first place?
Well, the funny thing about all this is you get pieces of information, and then when you put it out there, people come back with other pieces of information. It's like everybody has a little piece of the puzzle. And until everybody starts, you know, the first thing you got to do is understand is you got to stand and you got to separate yourself, because as long as you're sleeping with a beast, you ain't going to see it. And as long as you know you're pledging allegiance. But I understand about what you're saying. We still got to be down here. And if you look at all the men of old in the past, they lived in Egypt, and like Daniel, he lived in Babylon. It was all there. It was all functioning. And I understand that. But if you think for a second, you know, that one of us is going to change what's coming down the pike, we're just wasting our time and we're actually doing contrary to what God told us to do, and that is to be separate. And now we can understand why he told us to be separate, because if we do assist Islam and we say we should all get together and there are many paths to God and there's all kinds of different religions and they're all good for the state, we get to that point, then we suffer the same fate. Okay, and so this is like a coming out of it, preparing yourself, and it's nothing more than just complying with the word instead of, you know, the church has been infiltrated by Masonic capitalism, just like the black church has been infiltrated by Islamic socialism, okay? And people are vying for, you know, the destruction of the true church, everybody and everybody complying with the word, you know? If it's straight from the word, you begin going, you know, I guess we'll accept, I guess we'll assist them. I guess we'll start throwing tax dollars to them so we can help their poor, what, and buy bombs to eliminate you and take your land? And that's the stupidity of what they expect us to do, and that's what they're expecting us to do. You know? I mean, you would think that somebody out here would sound the alarm and say, wait a minute, okay, let's take a time out and a breather. Okay, you had a discussion about this. Let's lay all these cards on the table and find out really who is the bigot, who is the one who's threatening violence. You know, it's like Islam, the foundation of Islam was started with violence. Muhammad was in a cave, and he had this angry angel come up to him and choke him and demand that he recite the message that God did not beget a son.
Indeed, and as you say, just like God said through the prophet Hosea, my people are destroyed through lack of knowledge. There aren't enough people out there in the Christian church who are asking questions about why these things are happening with the complicity of the United States government, and why preachers are going along with it and seeking political power instead of just standing on the word of God and depending on him, just like the ancient Hebrews who were told by God to trust in God for their protection, but instead turned to the Egyptians and the Babylonians for political alliances to protect them against the Assyrians and so forth. And it never worked out well. Stephen, why Indiana? What was so important about Indiana that this connection between Washington, D.C. and Indianapolis was made in the first place?
Because Washington is the place where the God resurrects, and Indiana is the place where the God goes into the underworld.
Okay, but why Indiana? I mean, are we a certain distance away, or?
Because the day is divided into 24 hours, and so the God travels 12 hours above, and he travels 12 hours below. And the Babylonian god Enlil, which is the god Men in Egypt, if you look at it, you'll see where the capital and the obelisk come into play. And on my videos, you'll understand that these Egyptian gods have a breast and an erect phallic symbol. In Egypt, he was called Men. In Babylon, he was called Enlil. Well, Enlil in Babylonian tongue means the 50. So here's the deal. 50 miles one way, so I mean 50 miles an hour, 12 hours, you hit Washington, D.C., either way. And it also has to do with the path of the sun, because you got to understand that and this is where the goat comes into play and everything. And Capricorn, you know, what is the significance of the goat? And the Masons, what is the significance with the goat and the god? Well, all the goats, even like Alexander the Great, if you look at some of his banners and some of the depictions of the banners, you'll see he has the goat. The goat is Capricorn. Capricorn is what transports the god, the sun, up to his zenith. So, and then that's why they call it riding the goat, because in the apotheosis process, the king who represents the sun god, when he dies and goes into the earth, is resurrected by the goat, Capricorn, who brings him up to his highest zenith. What comes from Washington, D.C., where the capital sits, you have the summer and the winter solstices and the equinoxes all reconciled on that one point where the capital is. So if you're looking at your great seal on the back of your dollar bill and you're looking at the capital, you're actually looking at the federal triangle. You're looking actually at the sun coming up. You're actually looking at the layout of their city. And those two side angles, is the summer and the winter solstices. And the line that runs straight down through the middle is the equinox, and the sun actually wobbles or makes like a path of a snake from Washington into Indiana. And this is all significant as far as where the ground laid out, and that's why Washington Street runs, it's called the National Road, runs from Washington to Indiana. And all the other streets are like 90 feet across, and Washington is 125 foot across. And that's significant when you look at your coastline in Washington, it's depicted on a dollar and a quarter, or 125. It's all about math. And Washington Street and the National Road, that's the road that the sun travels down to come to this sacred crossroads. The crossroads of Indiana, it's the crossroads between the sun's zenith and the moon's meridian. That's why Meridian Street lays right in the middle of the crossroads, of the intersection of the sun and moon. So that's the fertility cult. If you look at the image of the eye, the circle with the dot in the middle, that's the solar orb, that's the sun. The crescent violet on top, that's the moon. And they believe that the fertility of the sun and the moon caused the fertility of the earth, symbolizing it in the triangle. and that's where you get your agent of honor. But at least the Carthaginians believe that was Bel, or the face of Bel is what they call it, that actual image, because it was a sacred union of the sun and the moon. So downtown, when they call it the sacred union, they're not talking about the union of the states. They're talking about this, the actual location of the sacred union between the sun and the moon at a particular time, causing the fertility of the earth. On a two by two square, whenever that 1 mile square in the middle, mm-hmm. they would say off to a 5 by 5 square, which is a Mars square, the god of war square. Okay, and if you look at a 5 by 5 square, the center square, and the center square is important because that's called the house of the god, or wherever the god is, that's where the god dwells. That's where the god comes out of. That's where the god goes down into. Is that center square? And that's why, like on that tablet of destiny, that Babylonian horoscope, the center square, the 13th square, is called the house of Ishtar because that's her house. That's the house of the war god. Well, on this 2 by 2, if you can picture it, in the middle of it, on this 1 mile square, they laid out the 5 by 5 square. And in the center of that is the 13th square, or the house of the Roman god of war. And that's where they put his erect obelisk. And on top of that erect obelisk, they put Victoria, or Indiana, or whoever you want to call her. She's the goddess in her sexual superior position on top of the erect phallic of the god of war. So you got a tablet of destiny, okay, and then you got Mars square, which is the god of the war, the Roman god of war, and then you got him with his erect phallic right there, and then you got the Roman goddess of war, which is Victoria, in her sexual superior position on top of the god of that war. It's the Roman version. And it's like they got tributes to the Egyptian version, they got tributes to the Babylonian version, and they got tributes to the Roman version here in Indiana. Oh. But the main purpose of this magic square and this magic circle, and that's another combination of the sacred union, they call it the magic square, and the circle is called the magic circle. And I got pictures in the old days where they had the arches up there, and it was actually, you know, engraved, the magic circle. Because the magic circle is on top of the magic square, another sacred union. So there's like immense amounts of combinations of combining, you know, Bel and Ashtaroth, you know, the opposites, and that's why they combine, you know, the pure with the profane, because that's what they do. It's like the Hegelian dialect where they take a thesis and an antithesis and they combine it so it produces a synthesis.
Well, Stephen, this is all very deep, and it's a lot. It's got our head spinning here, and we've just about run out of time. But before we go, let people know where they can find your information on the web to do more research for themselves so they can see exactly how this all fits together.
Yeah, I'm trying to explain it. It's almost impossible without the visual. If you go to YouTube, I got like 44 videos out. I would prefer if I go to like the earlier ones, where it's classroom, where you can actually, I'm trying to use a dry erase board to explain all this out, which is a lot easier to see. Just go to YouTube and search under Protestant Sept, ProtestantSept. Just type in Protestant Sept and put search, and then go to like the classroom. And that will explain how they laid out the foundation, what the connection of Washington, D.C., and how they laid it out. And you can go to, like, some of the Homeland Holocaust and go to, like, Part 7 and look at exactly. I mean, yeah, Homeland Holocaust, Part 7, and once you get the basic idea how they laid out the foundation, if you go to that, you'll understand how everything is and why everything is down here and why everything has escalated to this point. And we have very little time to get the church ready.
Well, we can put a link to your collection of videos at the PID radio, so people looking at the show notes will be able to go right there and see everything you've
got.
That's
right. We'll put links there. In fact, we'll post up one or two of the videos at PIDradio.com. We usually post a video of the week down at the bottom of the page. So when you go to the show notes, scroll down, and we'll have one of Stephen's videos there as sort of a lead-in to what we've been discussing today about Indianapolis, the state of Indiana, and what appears to be the government's compliance in a pagan occult system centered on the city of Indianapolis and branching out from there. Stephen, this has been mind-blowing, and we're just happy to have had this conversation. We need to have you back to talk about this more. Of course, as much as we love being back home again in Indiana, it's important to know what is going on here and the fact that there's been this movement going on inside this country from its very foundation mm-hmm. to worship mm-hmm. the gods of the ancient Egyptians and Babylonians. Stephen yeah. Michael Schroeder, the Protestant Separatist website, ProtestantSeparatist.com. And again, links to his website and his videos will be in the show notes at PIDradio.com. Stephen, hang on for just a moment, but thank you again for spending some time this afternoon with us.
All right. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
We'll have the show notes at PIDradio.com, and of course, a link to our forum where you can discuss this will also be in the show notes there. Again, it's at www.PIDradio.com.
And if you want to send us a note, you can always do the email. It's radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
Until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody. I can use it coming.
news and analysis on demand.
This is PID Radio.